21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus. So we're calling all the crows, they're coming up slow. It's going to be a showdown. Set the rebel to the revolutionary. Come with me, and if you feel like you are witnessing a movement, then get up, girl, and let them know you're free.
Oh, indeed. That state radio or calling all crows sounds like my friend Ziggy Marley and the group. Hey, Ziggy may be coming to Baltimore again. I'll tell you about that a little later on. Well, yes, it is true. Well, before that, I better tell you this. So I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, our executive producer, research assistant, Laura Cordner. Our engineer is Kristen Hegrick. All right. Yes, it's true. We have finished the We the People 1,500 square foot mural, whose focus is on the divine feminine in American symbolism and carrying the message that the most powerful nation on earth must tap into its female power to learn to lead with compassion instead of domination. And of course, it's located at Lafayette, St. Paul. Go take a visit. Now, if you've ever found yourself browsing through any major museum and wondering, why haven't there been more great women artists throughout Western history? Well, then our guest tonight is going to ask you to reframe that question. Yes, let's reframe it. The better question would be, why haven't more women been considered great artists throughout Western history? Over 51% of visual artists today are women, and yet, only 5%, that's right, 5% of the art currently on display in U.S. museums is made by women. It seems we have not advanced very far from the time period of the Renaissance when women artists were not even allowed to purchase their own paints and brushes and had to rely on male relatives to supply them. Well, joining us this hour is Susan Fisher Sterling, the director of the National Museum of Women and the Arts, NMWA, in Washington, D.C., founded to redefine traditional histories of art. The National Museum of Women and the Arts is the only museum solely dedicated to celebrating the achievements of women in the visual, performing, and literary arts. The museum honors women artists of the past, promotes the accomplishments of women artists of the present, and assures the place of women artists in the future. Director Susan Fisher Sterling first signed on as an associate curator of the new museum in 1988. That's the same year 21st Century Radio was born, over 26 years ago. Now, after recently graduating from Princeton University with a master's and PhD in art history, specializing in modern and contemporary art, as the museum's curator and chief curator for 20 years, she produced exhibitions and publications on a range of contemporary women artists, including well-received international shows focused on the art of Brazil and postmodern photography. During her five-year tenure as director, the museum has flourished, and among her honors are orders of merit from Brazil and Norway, the President's Award of the Women's Caucus for Art, and a selection in 2011 as one of Art Table's 30 most influential professional women in the visual arts. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Susan Fisher Sterling.
Thank you, Bob. It's lovely to be here this evening.
Well, it is lovely to have you here this evening. Now, is it true that the National Museum for Women in the Arts is the only major museum in the world solely dedicated to recognizing women's creative contributions?
It is true. There is no other museum in the world that does the work that we do.
That's hard to believe. Jeez, here we are. We're in 2013, and this is still going on. Well, when was it founded and by whom?
Well, the museum was opened to the public in 1987. It was founded by a woman here in Washington, D.C. named Wilhelmina Cole Holliday, along with her husband, Wallace Holliday. And they had been collectors of art since the late 1950s. But at a certain point in their history, they went to Europe and they visited various museums and they fell in love with a particular artist. And if you'd like me to, I'd be happy to tell you that story.
Oh, please do. Please do.
Well, the artist they found was named Clara Peters. She was a Flemish artist, and she specialized in still lives. And they saw her work in several museums, and they asked about her in those museums, and they found that they could find very little about her there. When they came home to the United States, they were leafing through Janssen's History of Art, which is the major textbook used in every college and university in the United States. And at that time, they not only found out that Clara Peters wasn't in that book, but of the 4,000 artists listed in that book in one way, shape, or form, there was not a single woman artist. And that really is what started Billie Holiday, Mrs. Holiday, on her quest to collect women artists. And that's really the germ of the idea for the museum.
Could you tell us a little bit more about Wilhelmina or Billie Cole Holiday?
Yes, I'd be happy to. She's an amazing, amazing woman. She is was born in New York. She is an American art collector and patron. And with her husband, she co-founded the museum. She graduated with a degree in art history from Elmira College in 1944 and also did some study at the University of Paris. She worked for the United States Air Force here in the D.C. area and also the Embassy of China, which we would now know as Taiwan, and then some years later married Wallace Holiday. And it really was that marriage, the interest in collecting, the epiphany that they found with Clara Peters that got them onto the track of founding the museum. And in fact, when the museum was opened in 1987, they donated over 500 works of art by women artists to form the core of the collection.
Boy, what an extraordinary thing to do. Well, congratulations to them. My heavens. And congratulations to you.
Thank you. The most interesting thing for me was at the time they created the museum, the first head of the National Endowment for the Arts was a woman named Nancy Hanks. And Mrs. Hanks was very interested in what Mrs. Holiday was doing and said actually to her one day, "Billie, you've absolutely ruined my ability to go to any museum. Anytime I go to visit a museum on behalf of the NEA, I go in and I ask them, what do they have by a woman artist to show me? And when they say nothing on the wall, she says, I get on my soapbox. You absolutely have to create this museum to redress the problems that we see in other museums regarding women's representation throughout history. And I believe that that push is what really got Mrs. Holiday to do this work.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much of your collection is contemporary, and how much is it is from other historical eras?
I'd say about a sixth of the collection is historical, and that's really historical from Europe and the United States. We have a collection of over 4,000 artworks by over 1,000 women artists. The majority really comes from the 20th century into the 21st century because, frankly, that's when women really have begun to thrive as artists, just as they have greater entree into society in all realms.
Yeah, certainly. Does your museum house nothing older than 16th century?
I've never seen anything earlier than the Renaissance. But, you know, it's interesting. There are very few examples of work by women that we can easily assert are by women other than embroideries from the medieval nunneries. There are some examples of ancient women artists, but they're only examples cited by someone like Pliny the Elder because, in reality, their works, they don't exist anymore.
Would you have anything representing ancient goddess cultures?
We do. We have several artists who are contemporary artists who have gone back and resuscitated the reputation of women in the arts. Artists like Judy Chicago.
Oh, Judy's joined us before.
Yes. Yeah. Nancy Spiro also has done a lot with ancient Greek women and their roles as performers. Mm. And then another artist like Miriam Shapiro. But one of my favorite things that we have in the collection is a 1971 New Yorker cartoon. And it actually shows a group of women sitting around with a cave with a fire and paint pots. And they, one of them says to the other, "Does it strike anyone else as weird that there are no great men painters?"
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's okay. And we actually know that on caves.
That's wonderful.
We actually know on caves that the paintings, you know, you see the man's hand, they say, but there are also cave paintings that have women's and children's hands, too. So we, I think that's where that comes from.
Yeah. Oh, goodness gracious. Wait a second. I got to get serious here.
Well, I'm glad that tickles your funny bone.
Oh, yeah, it does. Because other than that, I mean, geez, a whiz. This is pretty shocking stuff to me. It's really shocking stuff. And how in the world it took this long is amazing to me. But, well, besides the displays of objects and 10 exhibitions per year, the NMWA addresses the gender imbalance in the presentation of art in many other ways, thank heavens. Tell us about your library and research center, please.
Actually, I think that the library and research center is one of the great hidden treasures. It provides researchers from all over the country with information about women in the visual arts from all time periods and nationalities. It is open to the public, which is not true for most museums, and we get a variety of people who come, students, researchers, curators, and also the general public. We have wonderful displays, not only of you can use the books in our collection of the library, but also we have what are called artist books, which are created by women. And they're one-off, single-edition works that are often highly sculptural and very beautiful. And you can see those all the time in our library. The most important thing I can tell you about the library is that we are one of the principal repositories of information on women in the arts in the world. We, in fact, this year helped contribute articles to Wikipedia. We did a very large edit-a-thon where we created much better records of women artists in Wikipedia than they've seen for some time. And we'll continue to do that kind of work. We have a media library, which is great. It contains over 500 videos, DVDs, tapes, and other documentation of women. And then one of our prize possessions is we have an archive of Frida Kahlo's papers. And a lot of people find Frida Kahlo to be perhaps one of the most famous woman artists now. And we have over 360 of her letters and postcards, clippings and drawings, and are just about to create what we call our Mellor Prize book on Frida Kahlo.
Wow. Boy, it just must be 360 unpublished letters, postcards, notes, clippings. Boy, what sacred stuff. Jeez, oh whiz, what a thrill. Now, what are some of the other outreach methods by which you assure great women artists a place of honor?
I think our best foot forward really at this point is our website, www.nmwa.org. And on that website, you can gain tremendous information about the museum and its art. We have what's called our Broad Strokes blog, which keeps you up to date on all the various things that we're doing and or thinking about. We're just about to launch, and this is very exciting for us. We're just about to become a part of the Google Art Project, which is a major art project focused on museums throughout the world. And I believe we're about to become the 151st museum to be featured on the Google Art Project. And so that really puts us into company with the Uffizi or the Metropolitan Museum, the Museum of Modern Art, and it really gets gives us a presence and allows women artists' work to be seen by a much broader public.
I wonder how all the other museums that you just mentioned, how they feel about your museum.
Well, I can tell you when I went on the Google Art Project to look at the other museums' representations of women artists, I found them sorely lacking. So I'm sure at some point we're a bit of a goad or a prod to our sister institutions so that they can really recognize that they need to do more for women artists. I believe that early on the museum was somewhat controversial, to be perfectly honest.
In what way?
People didn't understand why there needed to be a separate museum for women in the arts. A lot of men thought that it was just, you know, a woman should be judged based on being a woman artist and based on being an artist and not have to worry about gender. And I believe that some women believed that too. The New York artist Helen Frankenthaler, for example, was one of those. And then some women felt that separating women out wasn't fair, that that was creating a difficult situation for women. But what we've seen so far is that you have to, if you can show, as we do, that women artists are wonderfully talented, that their works have been available since the Renaissance, and that they were exceptional in their era, I think that places more pressure on other institutions to have their galleries filled with women artists' work as well. Certainly you want to see that in the work of the past, but especially with how many women are working now in contemporary art.
Well, I couldn't tell. Well, I think that's this is perhaps one of the most important things that I did not know about in my life, and I'm so happy to hear this. We've done a series of scores of shows dealing with the Divine Feminine and moving into the next book that we're working on, and I've learned so much. I've learned a lot of embarrassing stuff that I never would have believed was true, which I'm certain you're quite aware of, dealing with how women were treated just 200 years ago in regards to their families and when they're divorced or when they got married, they lost everything.
Yeah.
Their children, I guess I apologize. I shouldn't get into that. But it's just hard to believe that men would stand by and allow that to happen. It just seems to be not only unethical, immoral, illegal or whatever, but it's not human.
Well, I'd like to say Judy Chicago, the artist, says feminism or supporting women in the arts, supporting women, is really humanism. That is the basis for being human. And what we strive for is equity for women through the example of excellence in the arts.
Well, it's just balancing things out, as far
right.
as I'm concerned. It's not trying to take over. It's balancing, which we need desperately. We really do. We better get into more serious stuff here. Now, you... I don't want to get into the politics.
No soapbox, right?
Yeah.
No soapbox.
Not right now.
Not right now.
No. You are celebrating your 25th anniversary. Any special events in the future?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you what a special event it is to get to your 25th anniversary. That is a marking point for any organization to be able to say that you're in a situation where you have grown, where you are financially stable, and celebrating that anniversary was great because people have been watching us over time. And when we look at some of the other museums and how they've struggled, especially through the recession, and when you think about how important it is to have this museum that is solely dedicated to the purpose of women's artistic achievements. We're, first of all, really proud to have gotten to this point. And to be able to move forward is obviously equally important. What I can tell you about the 25th anniversary is we really pushed ourselves to become more of a public name, if you will, to be, how shall I say, not a household name necessarily, but to try and move along the path where more people would know what we do. We're right in the heart of downtown Washington, D.C., 2 blocks from the White House, 2 blocks from Metro Center, and sometimes we're called one of the hidden gems of Washington. So over the next few years, I think the biggest program we're going to have, if you will, is to try and get people to know us better.
Mm-hmm.
And part of doing that is to develop a whole new set of public programs that will be based in the museum but will be then telegraphed out, to use an old expression, through our website, through YouTube, through other various social media. And I think what we'd like to do, if you will, and this is sort of a pie-in-the-sky idea, is we ultimately want people outside of Washington to know the museum and to come to learn about us on the web, to understand us through mobile apps, to become involved with us on YouTube, and then come to the museum in Washington almost like a pilgrimage site,
mm-hmm.
sort of like what you see happens at the Tate Modern,
yeah.
Or at the Museum of Modern Art, or other of the key museums that people seem to see as a must-see destination. So I think that's our biggest imperative going forward.
Well, we have a must-do situation we have on our hands right now, taking our first break here on 21st Century Radio. Our guest is Susan Fisher Sterling, director of the National Museum of Women in the Arts, featuring a Faith Ringgold exhibition. Remember Faith? She joined us about 3 years ago on 21st Century Radio and really knocked our socks off, even knocked my hat off. As a matter of fact, when I saw her, she had knocked my hat off as well. Faith Ringgold's exhibition, American People, Black Light, through November. www.nmwa.org.
My name is Sally Rush Wagner, and you are listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. This man knows how to interview. Stay tuned and be sure and listen to this show. And if you want to visit me, I am the director of the Matilda Jocelyn Gage Foundation. Check out our website at matildajocelyngage.org.
That was Aunt Sally. We've got to get up there. We've got to get up there in the years to come. I really miss her. Okay, friends, our guest is Dr. Susan Fisher Sterling, director of the National Museum of the Women of the Arts, in the Arts, featuring a Faith Ringgold exhibition, American People, Black Light, through November. www.nmwa.org. Susan, I like the themes of advocacy that I found on your website. Who are the Gorilla Girls, and what's their mission?
The Gorilla Girls are some of my favorite people, although I've never met any of them without their masks on, because they wear gorilla masks. So they are constantly playing with double entendres and double meanings. But their guerrilla warfare, as they call it, is against sexism and racism in the art world internationally. They are an anonymous group of women artists and feminists who are devoted to fighting for women's equity in the arts. They are a group that formed in New York in 1985, roughly 2 years before the National Museum of Women in the Arts opened. And their mission was to bring gender and racial inequality within the fine arts to light. And the way they did that was terribly persuasive. They used broadsides, like posters, that they would put up with glue all over downtown New York with very witty ways, really interesting puns and jokes, to prove that, in fact, women artists needed to be naked if you will, to get into the Met. That a nude was able to get into the Met, but if you had your clothes on and were working as a woman artist, that you that was nearly impossible in that in the 1980s.
I guess that's quite humorous. Is it true that the group reframes that? Are they the ones that reframe the question? Why haven't there been more great women artists throughout Western history?
Yes, they actually ask why haven't more women been considered great artists throughout Western history? But even more than that, what they have done oftentimes is they've done what we would call agitation propaganda, where they would be asked to come speak at a museum. They become very famous in the museum world, and they'll speak at a museum, and they'll actually agitate for greater representation for women artists, even at the museum they're speaking at.
Good
at our museum, they don't have that problem. So we have a wonderful relationship with them, but they have fabulous statistics on how women are treated. And now they're moving into some social justice issues as well.
Are they affiliated in any way with NMWA?
Only in a real affinity group. We have a terrific relationship with them. And on the advocacy site part of our website, we show some of their broadsides, and we also quote a lot of their figures, and those figures change. We work, while we don't work directly with them, we are the beneficiary of a lot of the work that they do.
Yes, we're all the beneficiary of that. Gee. Well, let's review some of the facts about women in the arts. Why is there such discrimination in the arts against women?
Well, I think it's two basic things, history and habit. And then money. For centuries, what you would see is that social conventions and also women's roles in society limited the training that were available to women artists. In fact, for centuries, the subjects a woman could render in art and the ways they could market to their patrons were severely limited. A woman artist generally had to be the child of an artist. It was unseemly for women to study from the nude. They were not, as you said earlier in the program, they were not allowed to buy their own paints or sometimes go out in public. And there are famous examples, the best known being an artist named Artemisia Gentileschi, who was raped by one of her father's fellow painters. And there was a sensational trial over whether she was qualified. Because she was an artist, she was denigrated as being a loose woman. So there were all sorts of reasons why women were looked at, especially earlier times, as being suspect if they became an artist. There also, frankly, was a question as to whether women had the mental capacity to be artists and to create history paintings and major works of art. In fact, a wonderful writer named Christine de Pizan actually asked the question, we all know the Renaissance man, but what of the Renaissance woman?
Yes, why not? Yeah.
And so it's really over the centuries that we see the development, if you will, of the Renaissance woman, a person, a woman of accomplishment who not only knows how to be an artist, but also is a woman of letters. And it's a very slow progress from the 16th century to, I'd say, the end of the 19th century before we really see women taking on the role of artist and getting some level of respect. That also accords with the suffrage movement. You can't really divorce the accomplishments of women artists and the achievements against the odds unless you start to look at what the social conditions were that allowed them to express themselves fully.
Well, here we are, 2013, so why is only 5% of the art currently on display in United States museums made by women when when 51% of visual artists today are women.
And that's the habit issue. It's such a habit for the history of art and for museums which reify history, which validate history. It's very much the case that museums have followed the path of the art historian. And it's only in the last 35 years that women have begun to get their due. So I would say the wheels of justice grind slowly in the art world. I can tell you that even though women earn half of the MBAs in the United States, they're only a third of the artists represented in galleries, in any kind of art gallery for purchase. Of the top 100 artists in the art market, none of them are women artists. It was some years ago, only a few years ago, that a woman ever made $1 million on a work of art, but there are 300 men who constantly are in that $1 million category. And although you cannot say that the marketplace is the judge of quality, what you can say is the dollars breed a certain level of capitalist respect.
Oh, yes.
And so what we think is that it's going to take about 100 years.
Oh, my God.
It's not a 100-year war, but it is a 100-year project.
So I have to reincarnate a couple more times here before we get this thing straightened out. Jeez, oh, whiz. Well, we need to get the Faith Ringgold for sure, I love this quote from Georgia O'Keeffe. "The men like to put me down as the best woman painter. I think I'm one of the best painters."
Absolutely, and she was.
And she was, indeed. Now, indeed, we need to get to our friends at the ACA Galleries in New York City. Dorian and Jeff Bergen are the ones who put us in touch with you, because their artist, Faith Ringgold, who joined us about 3 years ago, is on exhibit at the National Museum of Women in the Arts through November the 10th. Would you please tell our listeners who Faith Ringgold is and why her work is significant to American history of the last 50 years?
Yes, I love Faith Ringgold, and I can tell you that she is one of the great artists working today. Not just woman artists, not just African-American artists, but one of the great artists working today. She created a whole new content and context with the art that she has done over the last 50 years. She has been able to combine women's work with high art, especially through her story quilts. And these quilts present African-American and women's cultural experience as if they were godlike. She bases them on what are called Buddhist sanghas, and they are painted equivalents of the lives of the saints or the lives of the Buddha. And Faith has been very strong on putting the figure back into the art world, because when she started to paint in the 1960s, abstraction, very minimalist abstraction, was all the rage. And Faith said, this kind of artwork, this abstraction, is not my lived experience. And so she was brave enough to bring figuration back into the art world, along with a number of other people. And that's the kind of work we pay that has really held sway since the 1980s. Mm-hmm. So she was one of those great iconic figures who shifted the dialogue completely.
Well, we need to take our final break of the hour, but when we return, I'll ask you, you can study up on this question.
I'll do that.
All right. What is on display at your museum from Faith Ringgold? Let's touch on that a little bit more. Our guest is Susan Fisher Sterling, director of the National Museum of Women in the Arts, featuring a Faith Ringgold exhibition, which we're talking a little bit about right now, American People, Black Light, through November, I think it's November the 10th, www.nmwa.org. www.hiawatha.org.
This is Rian Eisler. I'm the author of The Chalice and the Blade, The Real Wealth of Nations, and other books, and president of the Center for Partnership Studies. And I've just done an interview with Dr. Bob Hieronymus for 21st Century Radio, and I've really enjoyed it. So I encourage you to listen. And I also encourage you to go to our website, partnershipway.org.
Hey, let me mention this. The Future of the Human Race, Dr. Zoe's new book is out, Visionary Thinkers on the Science of Consciousness. Even though there actually are some people at Johns Hopkins, even my friends, who still think there's no such thing as consciousness. Well, that's really quite something. Our guest right now is Dr. Susan Fisher Sterling, director of the National Museum of Women in the Arts, featuring a Faith Ringgold exhibition, which we're talking about now, American People, Black Light, through November the 10th, www.nmwa.org. Could you tell us a little bit more about what's on display at your museum from Faith Ringgold?
We have Faith Ringgold's series called American People, and a second series called Black Light. These are works that come right before Faith's story quilts. And these are very boldly colored, very provocative paintings that directly respond to the civil rights movement from Ringgold's perspective. She really is looking at what is going on in the 1960s through the lens of being an artist and an educator. She's looking at it from the standpoint of her relationships with her white friends. She's experiencing, as time goes on, the beginning of the black consciousness movement, where black is beautiful. And what we really see in the works that are on view at the museum is something that I believe captures a time in a very personal and unprecedented way. And this is the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington for Freedom and Jobs. August 28th is actually the date when Martin Luther King led that march. It's also the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. And thanks to Dorian and Jeff Bergen and the Neuberger Museum of Art, who worked together to create this exhibition, we were just lucky that the exhibition of Ringgold's wonderful artwork accords with the time frame of these celebrations here in Washington. So we feel tremendously fortunate to be able to show these works at this moment in time again.
Well, you also organized several programs around American People, Black Light. I see there's a gallery talk on September the 4th. What happens at the gallery talk?
Oh, actually, it's a time for the public to come in to work with or to actually experience with one of our curators or educators all the different works in American People, Black Light, and to actually be able to talk with us about what's going on in the paintings, and to give their impressions and to do a lot of give and take in the galleries. The gallery talks are roughly an hour, but they're an hour of conversation around topics that interest the group led by one of our educators.
What a unique experience. Wow.
It's actually a wonderful way to get up close and personal with works of art.
Now, there's a second artist on display at the same time in a show called Awake in the Dream World, The Art of Audrey Niffenegger. Niffenegger.
Yeah. It's a very hard name to pronounce, but some of your listeners may know her because she is the author of The Time Traveler's Wife.
Oh, I see.
And her work, she's not only a writer, but also a visual artist, and she creates those unique books that I referred to earlier called artists' books. The work is totally different than Ringgold's work. Very surreal, very much about women's unfulfilled desires, things about that are more fairy tale or fantasy like, and yet at the same time, Neffenegger is channeling very powerful emotions. So both shows have an emotional tincture that is gives you a real jolt when you go through the show and makes you think, which is what we love to do, introducing work that is not known to the public by artists sometimes who they know, like Ringgold, and then artists they only know in another genre when it comes to Neffenegger.
Is Neffenegger an American?
She is. She's Chicago-based, and she works at Columbia College in Chicago and runs their Center for Book and Paper Arts. She's a phenomenal graphic artist, and her most recent visual novel, which is called Raven Girl, was just adapted to a ballet at the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden in London. Mm. So both artists have a different sort of reputation, but again, having the public know their work better is really the is always the goal of the National Museum of Women in the Arts.
You know something we haven't even mentioned, I don't believe we've mentioned, where the NMWA, National Museum of Women's Art, is located. Did I?
It's located at 1250 New York Avenue, which is two blocks from Metro Center and a couple of blocks from the White House in the heart of Washington, D.C., and we have a wonderful sculpture island right out in front of the museum. So hopefully, as you, when you come to visit, you can't miss it.
Now, would you like to describe any of your other past or upcoming future exhibits?
I'd love to. The as you heard, the Ringgold and Neffenegger show is through November. And then, as we like to say, there's always something wonderful and new, different to see at the museum. I also want to invite men to come because we always say that the museum is about women in the arts, but for everyone. So please do join us. Our next show is of quilts called Worked by Hand, and it looks at how quilts have been viewed as craft art versus fine art over the centuries, how they've been viewed as part, as integral to the American experience. We then go totally 180 and are showing contemporary video art in the summer. And then after that, we're showing an amazing exhibition of images of the Virgin Mary from the Renaissance and Baroque called Picturing Mary that looks at all the ways in which the Virgin was created as an icon in the Renaissance and Baroque.
Any black virgins?
Any black virgin actually, Mary? The Black Madonna.
Yeah, Black
Madonna. Yes, we'll be doing some ancillary exhibitions, especially on our website that will deal with the Black Madonna, the Virgin of Guadalupe, etc. But the amazing thing is to think about, as Mrs. Holliday said, 25 years in the making, how the Virgin Mary was one of the most important women in the arts because she inspired so many artists.
Indeed she has. My heavens, yeah, she's inspired a good deal more than that. Our national symbols have been inspired a good deal from that. Now, hey, by the way, where does your funding come from, and how can our listeners contribute?
Well, we're oftentimes confused with the Smithsonian, but the museum, the National Museum of Women in the Arts, is a private nonprofit. And what that means is that 86% of our funding comes from private individuals and foundations. We get some money from corporate and about 5% of government support, but those are very small. So the best way to contribute to us is to go through our website, which is the address is www.nmwa.org, and look at the part that says support. And that's the most direct way. But the other way to contribute is to come and visit and to spend some time with us.
Well, as a matter of fact, what's the best way for our listeners to plan their trip to your museum?
Also to go to the website.
go to the
because
website.
There's a whole section on visit that you're the first thing you see when you look at our homepage, and that'll take you directly to all the ways in which to find us.
And admissions, $10 for adults, $8 for students?
Yes, it is. And, well, no, actually, students are free.
Oh, $8 for, oh, I see.
Okay. Children are free.
Okay. And obviously, one can become a member, and you don't have to worry about that, because then you can go anytime you want.
That's correct.
That's a great
and,
idea.
And it's also great. We have wonderful education programs, including a fabulous online curriculum called ABC, Art, Books, and Creativity, in case your listeners want to do work with their families at home.
Wow.
That also deal not just with women in the arts, but just how to become a creative human being.
Well, could you tell us just a little bit about the space where your museum is housed? It used to be a Masonic temple, I understand.
Yes, we like to say that what could be better than to build a women's museum from a Masonic temple that was once in the pornographic district of Washington, D.C. There must be some just desserts there.
I'm sorry. Well, yeah, that's an interesting piece of karma right there from that standpoint. And, of course, within Freemasonry, it's all masculine to begin with.
We've been looking for the secret room for some time, but what we figured is that the secret room, what it reveals, is the great beauty of women in the arts.
Well, indeed. I am a member. I am a Freemason, but I am a co-Mason. And a co-Mason we have both men and women performing the rituals. And I've been to a number of rituals, but the ones with women involved are just so precise. They are really something when it comes to ritual, I'm telling you.
I think that you'll find that the same can be said in terms of the art. When you come into the museum, what you see are great works of art, and it makes you go to every other museum in the world and say, where are the women artists? If these are so great, where are they in other places? And that's a great thing for us to be able to do.
It sure is. Susan, I'm just so proud of what you've done. Congratulations, really. This is so important to not just our country, but the planet.
One day I hope that the social landscape is such that women receive that kind of due across all disciplines. That's the goal.
Well, thank you. And thank you for joining us, Susan, director of the National Museum of Women in the Arts, featuring a Faith Ringgold exhibition, American People Blacklight, through November the 10th, www.nmwa.org. Become a member. Go to their website. Become a member. We're going to do that. We're going to do that in the next couple of days. Thanks again, Susan.
Thank you, Dr. Bob Hieronymus. It was wonderful to be with you.
No, we had a better time than you had.
Stimulating talk around the clock. And breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Lissandra.